First of all, Lynn, my apologies for the typo here. Okay. And let me acknowledge all the co-authors on this talk. And I don't know, you probably haven't noticed, but Paul Colaisi and Lynn McKee are not originally on the list of authors for this paper, but that was before I really actually did some work. And then once I got to work with the data, they're certainly in. So anyway, Steve, you've been doing much better job than I could possibly do about explaining why that is important and why evaporation is important. And that would be simply because water is a limited resource that must be well managed. And if we're talking about well managed, we're talking about basically water use efficiency. And if we take the evapotranspiration term and divide it to transpiration and evaporation, we can say that transpiration is a productive use of water, while evaporation we could consider water loss. So the lower evaporation would be, the higher water use efficiency we'll get. So there's certainly a room for a better understanding of this separation between evaporation and transpiration. And maybe that would lead us to improved water use efficiency and, you know, thereafter water preservation. So maybe just a little bit of how we did measure these separate fluxes. So we measured transpiration using subflow gauges. I'm not going to get into much details simply because I don't know much of the details. And then we had the evaporation from the soil that we measured using a set of 10 microlysimeters that we installed in two rows throughout the section of the row. You can see it here. So we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then another 5 like that in different places of the row. Each microlysimeter is a 10.5 centimeter diameter with a depth of about 9 centimeters, and the soil samples in them were replaced daily. So if we compare the 4 days that we have both the transpiration and the evaporation measured separately, and we compare them to the what we have from the weighing glazimeter, I would say carefully that we are doing quite well. We have an average difference of 0.02 millimeter with a standard deviation of a little bit more than half a millimeter when we are talking about fluxes of about 10 millimeters. Well, sometimes less, but so we are at least, we are surely within the range. So if we take that and continue on, let's look at how much water we are losing, or, you know, if you want to put it in other words, what is the fraction of evaporation? And we can see here the fraction of evaporation from the latent heat or the evapotranspiration from the lysimeter. We are talking here about, and these would be irrigation events, and that's the one rain event that we had during this about 2 week period that we're looking at the data. And we start immediately after irrigation, of course, the fraction is much higher, and then decreasing as we continue and get further away from the irrigation event. We start off with more than 30% evaporation, and we're talking here about 40% cover of the vegetation. And here we can see the LAI estimates, and you know, there is a trend decreasing evaporation as the vegetation develops, which of course makes sense. If we look now, and look at that, that's the flux tower ET versus the lysimeter ET, we have a large bias. We've heard about that a few times already today. There is a large bias if we look, if we take the flux tower ET and we try to see what is the fraction of evaporation, then we're talking about sometimes even over 50% evaporative loss from the total flux. And without getting into which of them is the right one, we are talking about a large fraction of evaporation. So if evaporation is such a large fraction, let's give it a little closer look. And let's try and see what the orientation of the row may have on the evaporation. Now, what it would have, or we may expect that there will be differences, mainly due to the course of the sun, okay, and what portions of the inter-row are getting illuminated at different times of the day, and this is going to appear again, but let's just first understand what we see here. If this is the north-south orientation, and these lines would represent the sun azimuth, okay, so the direction of the line is actually where the sun is coming from, and the length of the line is representing the zenith angle, okay? So the longer the line, the more shadow we will have on the row if there is something to shade. So I won't get into much details because we don't have time, but look at what happens during noontime when most evaporation takes place at the north-south direction. Most of the row is illuminated most of the time during around noon, while here we clearly see that at least part of the row is going to be shaded around this peak time of evapotranspiration. So what we had there to look into it, we had the 10 microlysimeters, as we said, and in addition to that, we had an array of temperature and soil heat flux and soil moisture measurements along the cross section of the row in both microlysimeters we unfortunately had only at the north-south site. Other than that, we had in both sites, we had soil heat flux plates buried at 8 centimeters, and then these red dots are representing the thermocouple measurements that we had. So we had temperatures at both sites throughout the cross section of the row to the different depths. And of course, we also had soil moisture data. So if we look at what we obtained from the microlysimeters, that's a diurnal course of, and the colors, it's not very clear, but the colors of the lines here represent the different locations here. And we clearly see how the peak evaporation is moving from the east location to the west along with the course of the sun here. So there is an effect of where the sun is at what time on the evaporative flux. Since we didn't have evaporation measurements at the east-west site, we can only compare temperatures, and we will compare temperatures at this day. That's July 21st, that's 4 days after irrigation, and we won't have time to get into all the details, but what we see here are the temperature fields, so that's east to west, and that's the 0 to 4, 6, and 8 centimeter deep. And we can clearly see that the fields of temperature in these two sites are different, and it's even clearer here during the noon or around noon when, again, evaporation is the highest. And if we look at the total evapotranspiration from the north-south direction and the east-west direction, again, this is at 2 o'clock where there is a large difference. We see that in the north-south side, we have slightly more latent heat coming up. Now, if that is because of larger soil evaporation fraction or not, that yet to be revealed, but it might be that that contributes quite a lot to this difference between these two sites. So soil evaporation is a significant player in the water balance of irrigated field, that's especially when it's a sprinkle irrigation, and it may reach over 30 or maybe 50% of ET, depending of what measurements you believe to. And then water use efficiency may be improved if more research is devoted to studying the separation of these two components, and row orientation seem to affect the soil temperature regime as well as the latent heat flux. And we saw in greater fluxes from the north-south orientation rows, about 10% higher compared to the east-west orientation. And with that.
Thank you, Dr. Agam, for ending the first half of our session on a humorous note. Are there any questions for Mary?
Read the comparison with the lysimeter and any covariance. Was that with the data logger?
Yes. PT? Yes.
Yes.
About 25 years ago, next month, I attended my first scientific meeting after finishing graduate school. And Joe Ritchie was making some comments on an analysis sort of like this. And he expressed frustration over a lack of recognition of the interaction of the soil evaporation on the vegetation's energy balance. In effect, to think of that water as wasted and to spend a lot of time trying to partition them is perhaps not that fruitful a way to go, because that evaporation does have an impact on the microenvironment of the vegetation.
Well, that certainly is true. And I don't know if we know enough about that, but I think my point is that there is clearly needs to get more attention that it gets, even if it's just to learn what is the effect of evaporation on the microclimate of these plants. But I agree.
Let me add to that, since I feel fairly strongly on that point. Joe's almost always right. But when the canopy is sparse and the wind speeds are high and the air is very dry, as it is in many of our semi-arid and arid irrigated areas, where we're getting more limited water and we can't support full canopy cropping anymore, then that idea gets turned over on its head. Because, in fact, then the moisture doesn't stay in the intercanopy space long enough to make a difference much to the plant. It's out of there. It's getting pushed out by turbulence and by wind, and it's not staying around to help modify that environment. And certainly in a closed cover, say tall corn crop, yeah, evaporation from the soil just humidifies the canopy and reduces transpiration. But in a lot of these situations, like this cotton crop, it's a significant loss. It is actually out of there. Any other questions?